Bonjour, and welcome to Bon Appetit on Demand on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Ellen Ward. Today I'll begin with an article from the October 2025 issue titled Splitting Headache. An industry veteran answers your burning questions about dining out by John DeBerry. Do I have to wait for everyone else's food to arrive before cutting into my own plate? Yes. I think it's a little weird to just start chowing down and make your friends sit through a non-consensual mukbang. Most places do their best to make sure everything hits the table more or less the same time. You can probably stand to wait the 40 seconds it takes for everyone to be served. Do you tip on the total price of the bill if you order a bottle of wine? Yes. Next question. Just kidding. There is a lot more nuance here. Tipping is a not great to kind of bad system for compensating restaurant staff, but at its core, it is structurally very similar to other commission-based models. A salesperson's commission percentage does not decrease as the price of the sold item increases, so you should think about tipping with the same framework. Often the beverage staff invests a significant amount of unseen labor in developing the expertise needed to sell pricey wine, and the bill reflects more than simply the cost of goods. If I don't like a table, is it okay to ask for a different location? Yes. In my nearly two decades of experience working in hospitality, I've never observed a conspiracy to give people the worst tables possible just for fun. Usually, the decision on where to seat a given party is based on matching the number of people to the number of seats while giving the restaurant the most flexibility to accommodate walk-ins and other last-minute changes to their books. A restaurant should be happy to oblige a request for a different table if possible, but take any denial with grace. Just because that table over there is empty right now does not mean that they're just holding it open to satisfy their need for sadistic thrills. If there's a social media influencer disrupting the meal with lights, cameras, and ruckus, who should speak up, the staff or the diner? Yeah, this is really annoying. If this is something the restaurant has arranged in advance, they should have at least set some parameters as to how intrusive the person can be. It is on the restaurant to schedule this outside the boundaries of normal service, or at least at the very beginning or end of dinner hours. If it's a spur-of-the-moment thing, the responsibility falls on the restaurant staff to curtail the photo shoot, regardless of the possible ramifications. People might be scared to piss off an influencer because they see a high follower count, but even if this person is genuinely huge on TikTok, it's worth the risk. Ultimately, the best PR for restaurants is word of mouth from the normal ass people, i.e. most customers. That should be at the forefront of running service. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that the people just wanting to have a meal in peace can do so. A friend invited me to a four-person dinner weeks ago. 48 hours before, they have not texted back about solid plans or a reservation. Whose responsibility is it to keep the plans? Top line answer is that the person who initiates the plans is responsible. Thanks to my German and Austrian ancestry, combined with a cacophony of mental health diagnoses, I'm the kind of person who will send you a calendar appointment for a dinner date 21 days in advance. I realize that this is not standard human behavior, so I don't hold this expectation for the general populace. Fun fact, I once made dinner plans with someone and sent them a calendar appointment with the time and location. They only realized I wasn't kidding when I texted them to say I'd arrived. How to proceed depends on determining how important is it for you to have these details more than 48 hours in advance. If you need to plan for childcare or someone else has invited you to dinner, it is perfectly fine to check in and ask for more certainty. If not, I just hold the evening until you hear otherwise. I'd recommend performing something of an emotional cost-benefit analysis to determine how you really feel about this person. If this happens a lot and you're willing to put up with it, accept it. If it's just not worth it for you, I don't think you need to send them a tedious friend breakup text, but it's perfectly okay to have a direct conversation about these factors. Classic friends scenario. How do you split the bill when one person barely eats? As a non-drinker, I sympathize with the friend who barely eats yet contributes a relatively greater proportion to the bill than others. In general, I usually offer to split it evenly with everyone, since we all basically have had the same experience. I know this is a privileged take, however. Whatever the financial circumstances, it should not be incumbent on the person to ask their friends to prorate their portion of the bill. I think the most graceful thing to do is for the rest of the group to cover that person's portion of the tip as an easy and clean solution. Or you can enlist the help of your server, because it's fairly easy with today's point-of-sale systems to split a bill. Next, restaurant editor Elazar Sontag on the restorative comfort of dining at home. Sky-high salads, my coffee habit, and the joy of eating with your hands. All year I look forward to hitting the road in search of the latest class of best new restaurants: New Orleans, Oakland, Austin, Asheville, Charleston. The trips blur together, but the thrill never fades. Neither do the stomach aches. When I finally came home from this year's months-long dining frenzy, I craved light, refreshing meals that wouldn't make my eyelids heavy. Pulling elements from some of my favorite restaurant salads, this squash and radicchio number is my return-to-home comfort food. Sherry vinaigrette is cut with hunks of creamy blue cheese, a trick inspired by my favorite salad at Via Carota in New York City's West Village. Instead of eating straight out of the mixing bowl like I normally do, I take a page from a meeting house in Philadelphia, a standout bar where the stately green salad practically hits the ceiling, and pile my leaves high on a platter. My partner and I cozy up, casually eating with our fingers. After weeks of restaurant meals, it's what I've missed most. Radicchio salad with blue cheese dressing, 4 to 6 servings. Blue cheese lovers, this one's for you. Blending sharp but creamy blue cheese into a sherry vinegar-based dressing transforms it into a glossy, rich foil for crisp, bitter radicchio. Large sweet pieces of roasted squash, along with crunchy toasted hazelnuts and thin slivers of shallot, bring this cozy, perfect for fall salad together. And this recipe is endlessly adaptable. Swap in delicata or acorn squash or even sweet potato for the butternut, and walnuts, pecans, or almonds stand in nicely for the hazelnuts. The ingredients are 4 ounces blue cheese, such as gorgonzola or Point Reyes, 1/2-1/4 cup extra virgin olive oil sherry vinegar or red wine vinegar, 1 tablespoon plus 1 teaspoon pure maple syrup, 1 tablespoon Dijon mustard, 1 teaspoon diamond crystal or 1/2 teaspoon Morton kosher salt, 1/2 teaspoon freshly ground pepper. Salad and assembly. 1/2 cup blanched whole hazelnuts, 1/2 medium butternut squash, about 1 1/4 pound, peeled, seeds removed, cut into 1-inch pieces. 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 1 tablespoon rosemary leaves, 1/2 teaspoon diamond crystal or 1/4 teaspoon Morton kosher salt plus more, 1 large head of treviso radicchio or 1/2 head of each, leaves separated, torn if large, 1 medium head of endive, leaves separated, freshly ground pepper, and 1 small shallot, thinly sliced, divided. Dressing. Blend blue cheese, oil, vinegar, maple syrup, mustard, salt, and pepper in a blender until smooth and thick. Dressing should be the consistency of mayonnaise. Add up to 1 tablespoon water to thin if needed. Do ahead. Dressing can be made 2 days ahead. Cover and chill. Salad and assembly. Place a rack in lower third of oven. Preheat to 400 degrees. Toast hazelnuts in a single layer on a rimmed baking sheet, tossing halfway through until golden brown inside and fragrant, 7 to 10 minutes. Let cool. Toss squash, oil, rosemary, and 1/2 teaspoon diamond crystal or 1/4 teaspoon Morton kosher salt on another rimmed baking sheet to combine. Arrange squash in a single layer and roast undisturbed until tender and golden brown underneath, 25 to 30 minutes. Place radicchio, endive, and a large pinch of salt in a large bowl. Season generously with pepper and toss to combine. Add squash, half of hazelnuts, half of shallot, and half of dressing. Toss gently, adding more dressing if needed, until combined and leaves are coated. Mound salad on a platter and top with remaining hazelnuts and shallot. Here are Elazar's feel-good five. How do you start your day? On the couch with an iced cortado. What's your go-to album right now? Suntub by M.L. Bouch. Best thing you bought for your kitchen this year? A life-changing set of stainless steel all-clad pans. Drink order at home? A Negroni made with Contrato bitters. What cheers you up no matter what? Discovering my boyfriend made an amazing dinner while I was still at work. Now we'll visit the restaurant powered by Nonas. They may not be your actual grandmother, but they'll still feed you like it. By Sam Stone. The best cooking, as anyone who's been to a truly remarkable restaurant can tell you, is personal. These are dishes to which the chef has a real connection, recipes with deep roots. It's that magic, a food made from beloved recipes committed to memory long ago. That's at the center of Staten Island's Enoteca Maria, simultaneously a hole in the wall and one of the most widely publicized restaurants in recent years. The restaurant's notoriety comes from its ingeniously simple premise. No one cooks like Grandma, and here, she'll cook your entire meal. Well, not your grandmother, but someone's grandmother. Each night, at Enoteca Maria, a different grandmother, a nona, as owner Jody Scaravella has dubbed them, takes the reins in the kitchen. She cooks dishes from her home country, just as she would for her own family, alongside the restaurant's fixed menu of familiar Italian fare. Perhaps you'll try Erica's Argentine turkican tonight and come back for Fatima's Turkish lamakun tomorrow. The seed of what would become Enoteca Maria was planted after Scaravella lost his parents and grandparents. Adrift and craving the warmth he remembered from his Nona's kitchen, he set his sights on an empty space next to Staten Island's St. George Theater, determined to open it as an Italian restaurant. He ran an ad in America Oggi, a local Italian language newspaper, hoping to hear from casalinghe, Italian for housewives, who would cook regional dishes. I invited them to my home, Scaravella remembers. All these ladies showed up at my house with their husbands and their children and their grandchildren and their neighbors and their cousins. I had a house full of people following me around with plates of food. He hired every grandma who showed up. When you cook from your heart and people eat and come to you and say, "Oh, it's so delicious," the next time, you want to do even better. Maral Zilikman. Enoteca Maria, an homage to Scaravella's late grandmother, opened in 2007 with a handful of older women cooking the dishes they'd learned to make in childhood. I wanted to fill the kitchen with Italian ladies puttering around and expressing themselves in a culinary way, Scaravella says. It was comforting for me. But the restaurant wasn't an immediate success. On opening day, six nonas stood ready for a rush in the basement kitchen, but the restaurant stayed empty. When one nona ventured upstairs and saw no customers, Scaravella says she got on her hands and knees and she started praying to Padre Pio. Wouldn't you know it? 15 minutes later, the restaurant was full. A portrait of Padre Pio still hangs in the restaurant today. He's our guy, Scaravella says. In 2015, Enoteca Maria's cuisine expanded beyond Italy as Scaravella welcomed grandmothers of all nationalities into the kitchen. The menu began to change slightly. One night Greek, the next Sri Lankan, according to the heritage of the nona cooking that night. The rest is history. The reservations book now stays unfailingly filled. Scaravella released a successful cookbook in 2015 titled Nona's House, and this year, Nona's, a film inspired by the restaurant story, starring Vince Vaughn and Susan Sarandon, premiered on Netflix to more than 15 million viewers in its first week. Throughout it all, the women who cook behind the restaurant's five-burner stove have remained the stars of the show. It's an honor, many told me, to be able to share their food, their heritage, and the cuisine of their native country. It's incredible to feed people and to see the joy in food, says Melanie Mandel, who cooks Ashkenazi food, her voice trembling with emotion. It's a satisfaction from within, and it's just what I was taught to do. Nancy Hoffman, who claims the title of oldest Nona at 94, said cooking at Enoteca Maria feels distinctly special, as she started cooking professionally more than 30 years ago. It's the climax of my cooking career. For some Nonas, sharing their food is second nature. I love to cook, and when people enjoy my food. When you come here, you feel like you're with family, says Kathy Viktorenko from Uzbekistan. As if you're in your own kitchen cooking for someone. Everybody who tries my empanada says to me, no other place does what I do. I don't know if it's true, but I'm proud. Zoraida Benitez. Each of these women represents a link in a living chain of shared culinary knowledge spanning generations. A lot of ladies out there possess a lot of old world knowledge, Scaravella says. They carry tradition forward. Many of Enoteca Maria's nonas said they learned to cook from their own mothers and grandmothers, and that they now were teaching their grandchildren these same recipes. In typical grandma fashion, many of the nonas do not cook with set measurements or written recipes, relying instead on taste, smell, and memory. Everything is here, Wen Xian, who hails from Shanghai, says, pointing to her head. A night at Enoteca Maria isn't without its challenges. There's the unfamiliar induction cooktop for one, and the fast-paced service in the 35-seat restaurant for another. But the nonas barely bat an eye. 10, 15, 20. I'm used to that, Mandel says. I start by thinking about what they'll take home. Others, like Zoraida Benitez, agree. I'm a chef, she says. I graduated from the New York Restaurant School. For some restaurants, a menu oscillating between a number of international cuisines would mean constant chaos, perpetually changing ingredient orders and costs, and a constant stream of new talent in the kitchen would be too much to bear. But the team is fearless, whether wrangling dozens of nonas or stocking the small but mighty restaurant with everything it needs. Their tireless work results in the easy comfort of a kitchen you've known all your life, even if it's someone else's grandmother cooking. We speak the same language, Jeanne says. We love food. Now, from the Bon Appetit Bake Club, is a chocolate chip cookie with olive oil and sea salt recipe by Jesse Sedgwick. Chocolate and olive oil are a match made in heaven, both nuanced and fruity, with a touch of bitter complexity. When combined into a cookie, the pairing shines, only heightened by the sweetness of sugar. Here, olive oil is used in place of butter to create a quick, mixer-free cookie dough that turns your standard butter-based recipe on its head. It's a classic chocolate chip cookie dough, but all grown up, with an alluring fruitiness and slightly savory edge. The dough is made by toasting a portion of the flour directly in the olive oil, not unlike making a roux, until the flour is tanned and takes on notes of caramel. This cooked flour mixture is whisked with sugar to create a rich brown butter-like base without relying on any actual dairy. In fact, the cookie is entirely vegan, but only incidentally so. We found that without eggs, the cookies came out delightfully chewy in the center with a contrasting crisp exterior. So for those looking for a great vegan cookie option, look no further. But for those simply looking for a fun new pantry-friendly chocolate chip cookie recipe to take for a spin, this is also for you. It has won over even the most die-hard of butter lovers. Baker's tip. When picking out a bottle of olive oil to use, I like to opt for something nice, but not an entire splurge. A readily available bottle like California Olive Ranch is a great option. lending the cookie a fruity, ever so slightly floral quality. More expensive bottles, often labeled drizzling or finishing, tend to overwhelm the cookie with spicy, grassy notes. And a word of caution to anyone diving into this recipe, don't skip the water in the dough. Without eggs or butter, the dough needs some moisture from the added water to properly hydrate and activate the leaveners. Recipe information, total time 1 hour plus cooling. Yield, makes 12 large. Ingredients, 2 1/3 cups, 292 grams, all-purpose flour divided. 2/3 cup extra virgin olive oil divided. 1/4 cup packed, 150 grams, dark brown sugar. 1/2 cup, 100 grams, granulated sugar. 1 tablespoon vanilla extract. 1 1/2 teaspoons diamond crystal, or 3/4 teaspoon Morton kosher salt. 1 teaspoon baking powder. 1 teaspoon baking soda. 6 ounces bittersweet chocolate, coarsely chopped. Flaky sea salt. Preparation. Step 1. Place racks in upper and lower thirds of oven. Preheat to 375 degrees. Cook 1/3 cup, 42 grams, all-purpose flour, and 1/3 cup extra virgin olive oil in a medium saucepan over medium-high heat, stirring constantly with a heat-proof rubber spatula until mixture darkens ever so slightly. Think the color of desert sand, and smells slightly nutty, about 5 minutes. Immediately transfer to a large heat-proof bowl and let cool 20 minutes. Step 2. Add 3/4 cup packed, 150 grams, dark brown sugar, 1/2 cup, 100 grams, granulated sugar, 1 tablespoon vanilla extract, remaining 1/3 cup extra virgin olive oil, and 1/3 cup water to flour mixture, and vigorously whisk until sugar dissolves slightly, 30 to 60 seconds. Add 1 1/2 teaspoons diamond crystal or 3/4 teaspoon Morton kosher salt, 1 teaspoon baking powder, 1 teaspoon baking soda, and remaining 2 cups, 250 grams, all-purpose flour, and stir with clean rubber spatula until no pockets of dry flour remain. Add 6 ounces bittersweet chocolate, coarsely chopped, and stir to evenly distribute. Step 3. Using a number 16 cookie scoop or 1/4 cup measuring cup and working one at a time, scoop out dough and divide between 2 parchment-lined baking sheets, spacing about 2 inches apart. You should have 6 cookies per sheet. Dough will be soft. Sprinkle tops with a little flaky sea salt. Step 4. Bake cookies, rotating baking sheets top to bottom and front to back halfway through until tops of cookies are puffed and cracked, 11 to 13 minutes. Firmly tap baking sheets on counter once or twice to deflate cookies. Let cookies cool on baking sheets at least 1 hour before serving. Cookies will be very soft when hot. Do ahead. Cookies can be baked 3 days ahead. Store airtight at room temperature. I'll conclude today with some shopping. The game-changing food storage containers I use for everything. They hold way more than you think. By Mark Marino, September 8th, 2025. I've never liked plastic food containers. In my experience, they stain, retain odors, become misshapen, and start to look gross over time. And of course, there's also the concern that microplastics and toxic chemicals can leach into the contents of the containers when they're exposed to heat. That's why I ditched plastic for glass storage containers a long time ago. But recently I found a new alternative that I love even more. Super, that's S-O-U-P-E-R, cube ceramic dishes. The durable rectangular containers are in constant rotation in my kitchen, whether I'm freezing portions of food for easy weeknight dinners, taking my lunch on the go, or storing leftovers. Crafted from sturdy stoneware, SuperCube ceramic dishes are safe for use in the freezer, dishwasher, and even up to 450 degrees. Each dish has a glazed coating that's free of lead and heavy metals, and comes with a BPA-free silicone lid that stretches around the container's handles for an airtight seal. SuperCube's ceramic dishes come in four colors, white, charcoal, cranberry, and blueberry, and are sold as a set of two 5x5-inch square dishes or four 5x3-inch rectangular dishes. Since I'm cooking for one, I opted for the latter, which are perfect for storing smaller portions as well as baking mini breads and loaf cakes. The reason I love SuperCube ceramic dishes more than any other food storage container I've tried is that they are extremely versatile and make meal prep so much easier. I like to cook large batches of food on Sundays and freeze individual sized portions in the dishes for hassle-free meals throughout the week. I've used the SuperCube ceramic dishes to freeze a variety of pasta recipes, chicken and rice, and roasted summer vegetables. I've also prepped mini turkey meatloaves in the stoneware dishes, storing the seasoned, uncooked loaves in the freezer, then baking them when it's time to dine. The petite SuperCube ceramic dishes are extremely portable, making them great for toting food to work, a park, or a picnic. I've enjoyed fruit salad, chopped salad, and lots of leftovers outdoors over the summer, and the container's stretchy, tight-fitting silicone lid kept the contents fresh and prevented juices, dressings, and sauces from leaking. And don't be fooled by their small size. These dishes hold a surprising amount of food. SuperCube ceramic dishes have truly been a game changer in my kitchen. Since lunch or dinner is already waiting for me in my freezer or fridge, I'm spending less time prepping meals from scratch throughout the week. And besides eliminating plastic, I'm also cutting down on food waste. The colorful containers don't get lost in my already crowded fridge, so I don't need to worry that the food will be forgotten and turn bad. Plus, the lid's airtight seal keeps contents fresh for days. I also appreciate the space-saving design of the dishes, which stack neatly when storing food in the fridge or freezer, and can be nestled inside each other in my cabinet when not in use. SuperCube ceramic dishes are a meal prep superhero that I rely on practically every day, and trust me, you will too. Mark Marino is a writer and editor experienced in creating lifestyle and shopping content for national media outlets, including People, The Kitchen, and Food & Wine. He's a passionate home cook with an extensive background in testing kitchen products such as groceries, small appliances, cookware, and tools. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Bon Appetit on Demand on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Ellen Moore, saying au revoir and hoping that you'll tune in again soon.